Shadow Mountain presents Dragon Watch by Brandon Mull. This unabridged presentation is performed for you by Kirby Hayborn. From the Journal of Stan Sorensen. Could this be the end? Will I be counted among the last of the caretakers? Could this long-standing trust dissolve during my watch? I have loved Fablehaven since I first beheld the wonders disguised here. Most in the modern world cannot guess at the splendors concealed on these enchanted refuges, where creatures of legend hunt and frolic. More than 50 years have passed since Fablehaven won my heart. But it comes with a price. How far am I willing to go to fulfill my duty, to protect the magical sanctuaries of the world? I made peace with sacrificing my own life long ago. But what about the lives of others? What about my family? I have longed to share the marvels of Fablehaven with those I love most, but knowledge of those miracles means exposure to the dangers as well. Magical creatures can dazzle. They can also kill. For me, the wonder outweighs the threat, but what right do I have to make that decision for another? I never forced anyone to discover what is really happening at Fablehaven. Certainly not my grandchildren. But I let their curiosity lead them to the truth. After drinking the milk from Viola, the magical milk cow, Kendra and Seth could recognize that the butterflies here were actually fairies. The goats were satyrs, and the horses were centaurs. That first time is so incredible, and it never becomes ordinary. I could have prevented it, but I allowed Fablehaven to unfold for them. Inevitably, it took hold of them, as it always does. And peril followed. Kendra and Seth know my real reason for living at Fablehaven. As caretaker, I serve the inhabitants of this preserve and protect the outside world from them. I am fed by experiences that stretch the definition of reality. I behold spectacles known by none except those with access to these extraordinary sanctuaries. My grandchildren appreciate the responsibility of protecting these refuges. They have shown willingness to sacrifice as well. I thought we had survived the worst of it. We were pushed to our limits. Our lives were in jeopardy. Loved ones died. Kendra and Seth were almost lost. But in the end, they tipped the scales to save us all. But now they may be needed again. I believe I can protect them, but I have wrongly believed that before. Once again, frankly, I don't know what to do. My responsibility is plain, but how far am I willing to go? How much am I able to risk? Is it fair to give them a choice? Is it even a choice? When I know what they will choose. Chapter 1. Eavesdropping. Kendra Sorensen jogged through the warm mist, damp gravel crunching underfoot, wondering if the moisture in the air was falling enough to be called rain. Sprinkles, maybe. She glanced up at the gray blur of the sky beyond the treetops, then over at a trio of fairies, each surrounded by a hazy halo of light. Nothing pattered against the hood of her windbreaker, but it was wet, as were the leafy branches on either side of the long driveway. This was the murkiest morning of the summer, at least since Kendra had started jogging. The 15-year-old typically got up just before sunrise and ran around the perimeter of the big yard 3 times. Each lap included running up the driveway to the gate and back. Any larger route would either take her beyond the boundaries of Fablehaven, exposing her to threats from outside the preserve, or else make her vulnerable to some of the dangers held back by the magic protecting the yard. Roaming the woods of the sanctuary was not a safe proposition. There had been no sunrise to watch today. The grayness had simply grown brighter as she followed her standard path, soles slipping on the wet grass. The gate came into view up ahead, closed as usual, wrought iron topped with fleur-de-lis, the only potential opening in the fence that enclosed the entire preserve. Kendra always touched the gate before turning around. As she approached the black bars and reached out a hand, Kendra paused. She heard a motor approaching and tires mashing gravel. That was highly unusual. The gate to Fablehaven was well back from the main road. A distractor spell helped motorists ignore the nondescript turnoff, and you didn't have to travel far along the driveway before finding several emphatic signs warning away trespassers. People did not come to Fablehaven by accident. And when visitors were expected, it was big news. Grandpa or Grandma Sorensen inevitably brought it up ahead of time. Often the gate was left open for the arrival. So who was approaching? Who might come to Fablehaven unannounced? An old friend? A spy? An enemy? Or somebody really lost and fairly illiterate? In case the visitor was an enemy, Kendra hurried off the driveway, withdrawing into the trees and crouching behind some shrubs. Leaving the driveway reduced her protection from magical threats, but trouble seldom happened this close to a protected area. The chance to hide seemed worth the small risk. Before long, a white sedan pulled into view and parked just outside the gate. A cowled figure emerged from the vehicle. Kendra had a hood herself. The weather called for covering your head, but the hooded brown robe of the stranger looked to have come from a bygone era. It deliberately concealed the face in deep shadow. This was no lost tourist. It might not even be human. This had to be somebody who knew about preserves for magical creatures. Was the stranger going to try to break in? The gate wasn't visible from the house, but parking on the driveway didn't seem very subtle. Then Kendra heard crunchy footsteps on the gravel from the direction of the house. She remained frozen as Grandpa Sorensen strode into view, wearing a jacket and a baseball cap. She held her breath as he walked up to the gate. It didn't open.
"You want to talk?"
Grandpa called through the bars to the robed figure.
"Briefly, yes,"
the figure replied in a raspy voice. As captain of the Knights of the Dawn, the organization that policed the magical preserves of the world, Grandpa met from time to time with various individuals who provided information. Those exchanges often happened in his office. Apparently, he also sometimes met informants at the gate. Kendra felt guilty for eavesdropping, but it seemed more awkward to announce herself at this point. She hunkered lower behind the shrubs.
"The situation continues to deteriorate," the cowled figure warned. "They will most likely be needed. The boy should settle his affair with the sisters."
"I understand he has the better part of a year to meet their terms,"
Grandpa said.
"Owing the sisters is no small concern," the figure insisted. "Who knows where he might end up over the coming months? What if circumstances prevent him from paying his debt? Why not seize the moment? For how long do you want the sword in his possession? It is powerful, but is it safe? That weapon has a history of corrupting those who wield it.
I hear you, Grandpa said. I'll consider advising him. Any word from Soaring Cliffs?
No good tidings, the figure responded, taking a step back. I should depart. We'll be in touch.
Thank our mutual friend, Grandpa said.
Thank him by taking the necessary action, Stan Sorensen, the figure warned. This could quickly become a bigger mess than the previous crisis. Prepare while you have time.
Grandpa glanced down the driveway back toward the house.
Expecting someone?
The figure asked.
My granddaughter is out for her morning run, Stan said.
I must away,
the figure said, retreating to his car. Grandpa started back to the house without a wave. The engine started, and the vehicle rolled forward and back to make a multi-point turn. By the time the sedan passed out of sight, Kendra could no longer hear her grandfather. She waited in silence until the sound of the car faded to nothing. What had she just heard? They had to be talking about her younger brother, Seth. Kendra knew that he had made a deal with some witches to find the legendary sword Vasilis, but why was some shady outsider taking an interest? And what big problem was brewing? Whose help was needed? It sounded like the trouble could involve her and her brother. Kendra crept back to the road and looked down it carefully. Grandpa was no longer in sight. He had probably entered the house. She jogged back to the yard, then did part of another lap before quitting and going inside. She found Grandpa Sorensen in his study.
Good morning, Kendra, he said.
Good morning, she replied, watching him. He seemed relaxed.
Strange weather today, Grandpa observed.
Gray and soggy. Did we have a visitor? Grandpa scrunched his eyebrows.
Why would you think that?
Kendra weighed how much to say. I noticed you walking down the driveway. Grandpa smiled.
Just checking the gate. I do that when I get restless.
Okay, Kendra said. She didn't want to press him. See you later. She walked from the room. It wasn't like Grandpa to lie. Part of his job, both as a caretaker of Fablehaven and as captain of the knights, involved keeping secrets. She had no doubt that Grandpa would lie to protect a secret he thought might be harmful to others. It bothered Kendra to know part of a story that probably involved her and her brother. Should she tell Grandpa she had seen the stranger? Should she relate what she had heard? Should she demand to know the identity of the mysterious figure? Should she ask why she and her brother might be needed? Her instincts warned her that further probing would yield little fruit. Whatever the details might be, Grandpa wasn't ready to share, and he was a professional at keeping secrets. Should she talk to Seth about it? Kendra doubted whether her brother could keep this quiet, especially since it involved him directly, and there was more to find out. For now, it might be best to worry and wonder on her own. Whatever secrets Grandpa and this stranger knew, one thing seemed clear. Serious trouble was coming. Chapter 2. A Promise Kept. Seth crept deeper underground, flashlight in hand. Pale roots corkscrewed from the glistening muck of the curved ceiling. Some caves had a rich, earthy smell, full of gritty minerals. This was not one of them. Things were rotting down here. Bugs were breeding and slime was spreading. The uneven floor of the tunnel squelched beneath every step. The wraith beside him did little to cheer the atmosphere. Not quite alive and not quite dead, it strode silently, disturbingly still, even when in motion, the darkest shape in the shadowy tunnel, radiating coldness
and an unnerving aura of fear. Some would have stood immobilized in the presence of the wraith, horrified, speechless, struggling to breathe, and the wraith might have crept up to them and temporarily relieved its own iciness by draining their warmth. But ever since Seth had become a shadow charmer, not only could he endure the presence of the undead, he could even communicate with some of them. The surest way to survive the company of a wraith was to strike a bargain. Seth had pledged to free this wraith from the dungeon below Fablehaven and deliver it to new owners in exchange for the wraith obeying and protecting him until the transfer was complete. A few months prior, in order to learn the location of the storied sword Vasilis, Seth had promised to bring the Singing Sisters the sword and a wraith. He had also agreed to fulfill one additional assignment of their choice. If he failed to keep the arrangement, an enchanted knife was ready to hunt him down and kill him. So he had selected the most companionable wraith he could find and set off on a road trip to Missouri with Grandpa Sorensen and the satyrs Newell and Doran. Even with the wraith being transported in a trailer behind their vehicle, its chilly presence had kept the other passengers on edge. On his only previous visit to the sisters, Seth had entered through a door in a high bluff. This time, the sentinel who guarded access to this narrow island in the Mississippi River had informed him that return visitors should enter through a low tunnel on the other side. Neither Grandpa nor the satyrs had been allowed to join him. Since arriving on the island and finding the muddy cave, Seth and the wraith had met no living creatures. Vasilis dangled from a sword belt Seth had slung over one shoulder. Seth was reluctant to part with a legendary sword of light and darkness. He technically had a full year to return the blade after striking the deal that let him find it, and the time was not yet up. But the weapon had served its purpose, helping him and Kendra hold off the demons who had emerged from Zizix. Bracken, the unicorn, had suggested Seth settle his debt with the sisters early rather than waiting until the last minute, in case something prevented him from fulfilling his promise. Grandpa had agreed and encouraged him to get it over with. Normally, Seth adhered to a fairly rigid policy of procrastination, but the threat of a knife pursuing him across the globe intent on ending his life helped persuade him otherwise. That and the boring months since the demonic apocalypse had been averted. With his Grandpa and Grandma Sorensen running Fablehaven alongside his Grandpa and Grandma Larson, life had been woefully uneventful. A road trip had sounded like a welcome relief. Giving up the wraith was no problem. Early on the drive, the shadowy form had earned the nickname Whiner. But Seth was going to miss the sword. As souvenirs went, a magic weapon was hard to beat. The tunnel ended at a corroded door. When Seth knocked, it produced little sound. Though scarred on the surface, the wood was thick. "You're almost home," Seth told the wraith. Icy words reached his mind in reply.
"There can be no home for me, only unrest."
"I felt a little like that in the car," Seth replied, trying to keep the conversation light. "Hard to get comfy. My rear kept going numb." The undead tended to dwell on emptiness and yearning. Get them started, and it sometimes became hard to shut off, especially this guy. "Think I knocked loud enough?" He gave the door a couple of kicks. It swung open to reveal a warty face with bulging yellow eyes.
"Who dares rap upon this portal?"
"Good question," Seth said. "You really should wash it." The river troll blinked in confusion.
"This is a domain of perils untold."
"I've been told," Seth said. "I came here before. The sisters know me." Leaning forward, the tall troll squinted at him.
"Yes, the boy. I suppose you have a right to pass this way."
You're not expected for some time.
I'm early, Seth said. I brought what they wanted. He touched the hilt of the sword and gestured at the wraith. The troll took a step back as his gaze shifted to the wraith.
I see. Very well. Since you are returning to fulfill an assignment, you enter by invitation.
Seth glanced at the wraith.
I think you'll like him,
he whispered to the troll while stepping across the threshold.
Great roommate. One of the guys.
Long feet flapping against the ground, the troll led them along a corridor that looked like a pale gray throat. The troll periodically glanced back at the wraith, clearly unsettled. Apparently, even other monsters didn't love the idea of having their life leached from them. The corridor sloped down before opening into a damp chamber cratered with puddles. Huge white maggots stretched and flexed grotesquely, pale flesh rippling, one in each little pool. Several short trolls with puffy builds and oversized heads scuttled away at the approach of Seth and the wraith. Around one of the puddles, three women stood in a ring. They had no hands. Instead, their wrists were fused together to form a conjoined circle. Seth recalled that the tall, skinny one was Berna. The flabby one with the droopy flesh on her arms was Wilna. The shortest, Orna, had acted nicest on his previous visit. The sisters shifted to better see him. Wilna had to look over her shoulder.
"Seth Sorensen," Berna greeted. "You return well before we expected you."
"Can't you see the future?" Seth asked, trying not to breathe too deeply. The chamber smelled sweet and rotten, like a decaying mix of mushy fruit.
"We don't peer down every avenue,"
Orna said.
"Ruins the suspense." "We could have sent the Covenant Knife after you,"
Wilna said.
"You weren't supposed to reveal our arrangement to anyone."
"It wasn't my fault," Seth complained. "Bracken read my mind. He's a unicorn. I didn't tell him."
"She knows that,"
Orna said.
"Otherwise, you would already be dead. And such a shame. You're starting out on a path much like the one walked by your great-great-granduncle."
"I have a long way to go before I can compare myself to Patton Burgess," Seth said.
"Don't be so hasty to dismiss the comparison,"
Orna warned in gentle tones.
"It's why I like you. We voted 2-1 against sending the knife,"
Berna said.
"Orna vouched for you because you intrigue her. I joined her because I sense you could be useful."
"Our private agreement leaked to outsiders,"
Wilna complained with a scowl.
"We were within our rights to slay the boy."
"And then we would have no sword and no wraith,"
Berna said.
"That wraith could come in handy."
"The boy still owes us a favor,"
Orna added.
"And don't forget Nagiluna."
"You heard about that?" Seth asked. He had killed 2 ancient demons with Vasilis, Nagiluna, and Growlis.
"Why would we need to hear of it?"
Wilna snapped.
"We can behold such events at our leisure."
"Are you angry?" Seth asked. The three sisters cackled and swayed, wrists creaking.
"Because Nagiluna mentored dozens of witches?"
Orna asked through her giggles.
"Well, yeah," Seth said. "I guess you heard about Gorgrog too?"
The witches laughed harder.
"What witch with any right to the title would have failed to note the fall of the Demon King?"
Berna asked. Seth felt confused by the merriment.
"Don't witches get their power from demons?"
"That is more or less true,"
Orna said, using her shoulder to rub away mirthful tears.
"But the power comes at a price."
She raised her arms, which lifted the connected arms of her sisters.
The demons are our sponsors, but seldom our friends. Fear and respect are not the same as love. The fall of a high demon can be delicious. To see the king brought low by a child,
Berna said.
An amusing day for one and all,
Wilna concluded. Seth couldn't take credit for slaying the demon king. His sister Kendra had done it. You're glad the demons were imprisoned after their escape? Seth verified.
Oh my, on the whole, yes,
Orna said.
Imagine all the groveling and bootlicking we would have to do with so many powerful demon lords on the prowl. It would have shaken things up,
Berna said.
No doubt about it. We could have found ways to turn an age of demonic rule to our advantage,
Wilna asserted stiffly.
It would have been complicated,
Orna said.
It's always complicated,
Wilna replied.
Now we have the dragons to worry about. But they have less direct interest in us,
Berna said.
Dragons? Seth asked.
No free predictions,
Wilna said.
Did I ask for a prediction? Seth asked.
Your future is entwined with the rise of the great worms,
Orna said. Berna jerked Orna to one side.
Stop blabbing! Don't pull me!
Orna griped, yanking Berna hard enough to make her stumble.
You saw my future? Seth asked.
We observe many futures, Wilna said. Not all come to pass.
Are you going to send me on a mission involving dragons?
Seth wondered. Wilna narrowed her eyes suspiciously.
You sound hopeful.
Seth shrugged.
I missed some of the dragon stuff at Wormroost. I was stuck in a knapsack. The dragons looked really cool at Zizix.
Told you,
Orna said.
Pattern all over again. We have not yet settled on your task,
Berna said.
Are you sure? Seth checked. I wouldn't mind getting it over with.
Why the hurry to repay us?
Wilna asked.
Things have been kind of dull around Fablehaven, Seth said, and it doesn't seem like a good idea to owe favors to witches.
Dullness won't be a problem for long,
Orna said.
Hush!
Wilna ordered.
Why?
Seth asked.
Turbulent times await us all,
Wilna stated.
You brought the sword,
Berna said,
and the wraith appears serviceable.
It's great, Seth assured them. Hungry, cold, lonely, everything you could want in an undead servant.
Empty,
the wraith thought at them.
And empty, Seth agreed. Thirsty, too. Fun at parties.
You'll serve us?
Wilna asked the wraith. Seth sensed the answer in his mind.
The boy brought me as a gift. I will serve.
It would appear Seth Sorensen has paid back two of his three promises,
Berna said.
I'm happy to do the third now, Seth reminded them. I get to use the sword for it, right?
Leave the wraith and the sword,
Wilna said.
We'll contact you when the time comes for your task.
When will that be? Seth asked.
When it suits us,
Wilna replied.
Good day.
Do you want my email address? Seth asked.
We have ways to reach you,
Berna assured him. Seth unshouldered the sword and set it down. He turned to the wraith.
Behave for the witches. Thanks for volunteering.
So very cold,
the wraith expressed.
No peace, no rest.
I'll miss you too, Seth said. It was a blast.
He turned to the witches. Anything else?
Not unless you care to strike a new bargain,
Orna suggested hopefully.
Not today, Seth said. Especially since I still owe you a service.
Our business is concluded for now,
Wilna said.
Be gone. or linger uninvited?
Berna suggested sneakily. I'll go, Seth said, moving toward the way he had entered. If you forget to ask for a favor, I'll forgive you. The three sisters cackled.
Don't fret about that, Orna said. We always collect on our debts, Berna said. Our dealings are far from complete, Seth Sorensen, Wilna said. We spared you from the Covenant Knife. Kindly repay the courtesy by staying alive.
What's coming? Seth asked, still moving away. Wilna grew grave.
No hints. Knowledge comes at a price. Maybe a little hint?
Orna asked.
No,
Berna insisted.
I have my own mouth and my own mind,
Orna fumed.
We already gave it away.
She gazed intently at Seth.
A storm is coming. A storm of dragons. Orna!
Berna and Wilna cried in dismay.
You won't have to wait long,
Orna promised.
Good, I guess, Seth replied. I never liked waiting.
Chapter 3. The Fairy Realm. A pair of oars propelled the rowboat toward the tiny island, stirring up miniature whirlpools with each powerful stroke. 12 graceful pavilions surrounded the modest lake, connected by whitewashed boardwalks. Beyond the pavilions, satyrs wrestled on green fields encompassed by hedge walls. Kendra knew that most at Fablehaven feared the Fairy Queen's shrine. The typical trespasser would be immediately turned to dandelion fluff. It had happened before. But today was more exciting than scary. Bracken sat opposite her in the rowboat, manning the oars, eyes on her as he guided the craft. Though she knew he was a unicorn, Kendra had never seen him in his horse shape. Bracken had become trapped in human form after surrendering his third and final horn to create an artifact that helped lock the demon prison. All Kendra had ever seen was a teenage boy who looked a couple of years older than her. His silver blonde hair, boyishly handsome features, flawless skin, and penetrating eyes hinted at his true identity, son of the Fairy Queen, a young man of astonishing power and purity. And she suspected he might have romantic feelings for her. But despite her best efforts to crack his shell, he kept his distance. She was still hoping for a first kiss. "Are you sure this is all right?" Kendra asked as the prow of the boat slid against the muddy bank of the island. He flashed a reassuring smile. "I told you my mother granted permission. That is the definition of all right in the fairy realm."
"No humans have ever been there?"
Kendra asked.
"Never," Bracken said. "You're setting a new precedent. Mother kept it closed off to the outside world, especially after Gorgrog captured Father."
Kendra shivered at the mention of the Demon King. She could still picture him, titanic in size, a vast tangle of contorted antlers sprouting from his bullish head. Chains had dangled from his wide belt, allowing him to drag around his most prized victims, including the Fairy King. After Kendra had killed the Demon King with Vasilis, the Fairy King had been rescued.
"How is your father?" Kendra asked.
Bracken lowered his eyes.
"Not much has changed since we found him. His body is whole, but he keeps to himself and hardly speaks. Others still have to feed him, though at times he will wander on his own."
"I'm so sorry," Kendra said. Bracken brightened. "It's not your fault. Kendra, you saved him. Most of us figured he was dead. I wish we had known. I would have mounted a rescue. Mother warned me his recovery would take time. After all, he was dragged around inside Zizix for centuries, chained to the Demon King. It's a miracle he survived."
I can't imagine how terrible that would have been, Kendra said, trying not to picture it.
We're lucky to have him back.
Bracken vaulted gracefully from the rowboat, and Kendra followed, unable to avoid noticing how clumsy and slow her effort seemed compared to his effortless coordination. Watching her with eyes that made her feel like the only real thing in the universe, Bracken took her hand. Three female heads popped up out of the pond not far from the island, and three eager smiles gleamed.
"Hi, Bracken,"
one of the naiads called in a flirty sing-song.
"Pretty day,"
another remarked coyly.
"Care for a swim?"
the third offered. Kendra frowned. Normally, naiads only welcomed men into their waters so they could drown them, but Bracken was different. Part of his superstar status among magical creatures meant naiads actually wanted his affection. Normally, the aquatic maidens would have harassed the rowboat, but the crossing had been tranquil. Kendra had even seen Bracken carelessly throw off his shirt and swim with the naiads before, never experiencing any trouble.
"Hi, Chiatra," Bracken said. "Good to see you, Zoli."
"Hey, Oline."
Kendra watched the naiads blush as their names were spoken.
"Sorry, I can't swim right now," Bracken went on. "I'm taking Kendra to the fairy realm."
Three sets of glaring eyes fixed on Kendra.
"Did you need somebody to sweep up the place?"
Chiatra teased.
"Is she going to be sacrificed?" Zoli wondered.
"It's part of our job to forbid the unworthy," Oline said.
"Be nice, ladies," Bracken said. "Your orders come from my mother. You know Kendra is coming with permission as my guest."
Oline and Zoli rolled their eyes and disappeared beneath the water. Chiatra looked Kendra up and down with naked disgust.
"I don't get it,"
she said before vanishing below the gently rippling surface.
"Your fan club doesn't approve," Kendra said.
The naiads all had lovely faces. Kendra knew any of them would belong to Bracken in a heartbeat if he showed any interest.
"Don't waste any thought on them. They're silly and harmless.
Unless they drown me."
Bracken furrowed his brow.
"I'll talk to Mother. We ought to forbid that."
He led the way to where a spring bubbled up out of the ground. A 2-inch statue of a fairy stood nearby, atop a small pedestal. A silver bowl rested close at hand as well. It had been some time since Kendra had visited the Fairy Queen's shrine.
"How do we cross over?" Kendra asked.
"Simple,"
Bracken said, but he suddenly seemed hesitant.
"What?"
Kendra asked. His posture slumped a little.
"There has been a lot of build-up to this. I don't want you to be disappointed."
"Why would I be disappointed?"
Bracken grimaced.
"The splendor of the old fairy realm was unreal. We sacrificed all that to create a new prison for the demons. Zizix was a mess when Mother and the others claimed it and began to transform it. This new home is still developing. It makes me sad to think of the demons wrecking your old realm."
"It's what got them inside," Bracken said.
"In all their millennia of evil, none of them even saw the fairy realm. The chance to go there and spoil it was too hard to resist, especially when the alternative was to fight dragons. Before they knew it, our old home became their new prison."
"And their prison became your new home," Kendra said.
"It was available," Bracken said. "Like our previous realm, the prison was a pocket dimension tied to your reality. The demons left the way open, and we were free to move in. There was lots of space. We've put in loads of work. Don't forget, Zizix held many of the most powerful demons in the world for thousands of years. It wasn't just a mess. It was horrifying.
Nobody can purify like unicorns, and beautifying is what fairies do. But plenty of work remains."
"Can I help?" Kendra asked.
"Who knows?"
Bracken replied.
Your fairy kind status makes you a powerful source of magical energy.
I'd love to be your battery, Kendra said. I can't wait to see your home.
I'll show you a lot, Bracken said. Mother won't let anyone inside the palace yet. She refuses to accept anything short of perfection there.
Maybe I can drop by again, Kendra said.
Once we set the precedent of you visiting, I expect Mother will keep having you back. It is very difficult to get to know my mother. I'm only beginning to understand her myself. But when you killed Gorgrog, you made a friend for life.
I hope so, Kendra said. The Fairy Queen has always been good to me.
She doesn't grant fairy kind status to many, Bracken said. Mother liked you even before you freed her husband. After the battle at Zizzix, I don't think she has more respect for any human.
Kendra thought about the barrage of fairy kisses that had made her fairy kind. Since that day, she had understood the languages of the fairy folk and didn't need special food or drink to see the magical creatures at Fablehaven or elsewhere. She could energize magical items, see in the dark, speak several languages, and who knew what else. Her abilities were still emerging. How would the Fairy Queen feel if someday her only son proclaimed his love for a human girl? Would Kendra's fairy kind status make her more acceptable?
Do you think we'll see your mom? Kendra asked.
She spends a lot of time in the palace with Father, Bracken said. If we run across her, she'll probably be in horse shape. She likes to go for runs in that form.
Kendra had been surprised to learn that the Queen of the Fairies was actually a unicorn. Unlike Bracken, she still had her third horn, so she could take horse shape whenever she pleased. She could also appear as a beautiful woman.
Ready? Bracken asked.
What do I do? Kendra asked.
A rippling glare of whiteness accompanied a disorienting sensation. Kendra recalled a similar feeling when she stood in the shallows on a beach while the water pulled away. As the sea water withdrew all around her, she had seemed to be in motion while standing still. She felt that same way now. When the whiteness dissipated, Kendra stood in a blossoming field. The cloudless sky was a golden orange with streaks of red and yellow. Peculiar flowers thrived in all directions, flaunting colors more luminous and bright than any Kendra had ever seen. The blossoms were of such diverse shape and size that Kendra wondered whether they were tropical or if perhaps they existed only here. Bracken's apprehension had led Kendra to envision a charred landscape with clusters of flowers beginning to grow and shoots of young grass coming up. She certainly had not expected flawless gardens stretching across rolling countryside to the limits of sight.
It's beautiful, Kendra gushed.
It's a start, Bracken said. A big improvement from before. Come this way.
He escorted Kendra to a broad, shallow stream where shimmering water tumbled down a series of rocky shelves. Several fairies waded in the silvery flow. All were taller than Kendra, built with the lithe athleticism of ballerinas, with bright, extravagant wings and lovely young faces.
Big fairies, Kendra said, like the warriors at Zizzix.
Fairies tend to be full-sized here, Bracken said.
Would the tiny fairies at Fablehaven have grown if they visited? Kendra asked.
Most would, but Mother wouldn't trust the majority with such power, Bracken said. Fairies can be so foolish.
I heard that,
said an extremely fit fairy with striking red hair and glittering green eyes. She fluttered over and landed before Bracken, legs wet to the shins.
The fairies here are exceptions to that rule, Bracken explained smoothly. Tinori, meet Kendra.
Hello,
Kendra said, trying not to feel intimidated as she looked up at a face that belonged on a fashion magazine cover. Thanks to her fairy kind status, Kendra knew that fairies were supposed to obey her.
but she wasn't sure if that applied to these larger ones.
"I remember you," Tenori said with a broad smile. "You killed Gorgrog."
"Yes," Kendra said, grateful to have some notoriety. "You must have been at the battle."
"I lost most of my left wing," Tenori said, spreading her elaborate wings wide.
Both looked perfect to Kendra, with colors like stained glass, backlit by sunlight.
"It's been healed, of course."
"They're so pretty," Kendra said.
"You," Tenori said, bopping her on the nose with a fingertip, "know the way to a fairy's heart."
She gave a squinty, self-satisfied smile and flitted away, her wings allowing her to turn gentle skips into soaring leaps.
"She's a little jealous," Bracken whispered. "You're so radiant."
Kendra glanced at her hands. They looked normal to her. Ever since she had become fairy kind, certain magical creatures would comment on her radiance. Kendra had never really perceived it.
"At least she spoke to me," Kendra said. None of the other fairies had glanced her way.
"Tenori has more confidence than most," Bracken said. "You know how fairies get. This is their special realm. You're the first human to come here. You killed the Demon King. You shine brighter than any of them. It's a sure recipe for envy."
The tiny fairies back at Fablehaven had been generally nicer to Kendra since she became fairy kind. She supposed their sizes were so different that it was easier for them not to view her as competition.
"This way,"
Bracken said, leading Kendra toward a bridge composed of smooth, rounded stones in several shades of blue. She passed a fragrant flower the size of a barrel and a shrub twinkling with numberless glittery petals. The perfume in the air was almost rich enough to taste.
"Seems like you're already finished," Kendra said.
"This area is more polished than some," Bracken said, "but the land needs more shape and character. Some big trees would add a lot, ancient groves or forests in their prime, and we have very few structures. We can do grass and flowers quickly."
"It's a paradise," Kendra said.
Bracken winked.
"Trust me, it'll be more impressive in years to come."
As they crossed the bridge, a pair of Astrids landed in front of them, brawny men with golden, feathery wings. Removing gilded helmets crafted to resemble the heads of owls, they bowed low.
"You look familiar," Kendra said to one of them.
"I'm Denwin," he replied. "This is Peridor. We were both at the Battle of Zizix."
"Prince Bracken," Peridor said. "Jubaya has announced that she will confer with us."
"Now?" Bracken asked. "I'm giving Kendra a tour."
"I believe that is why we got the offer," Peridor said. "Jubaya expressed interest in conversing with her."
"Absolutely not," Bracken said.
"Who is Jubaya?" Kendra asked.
"A demon," Bracken grumbled.
"You still have demons here?"
"Not all of the demons exited Zizix with the Horde," Bracken explained. "We've purged most who remained, but a few have proven tough to root out."
"You can't get rid of her?" Kendra asked.
"She's hiding in a sludge pit," Bracken said. "There is ancient magic there, deep and dark. Plus, her touch corrupts. Unicorns have temporarily purified the top layer of sludge, but the pool becomes tainted again immediately."
"This opportunity could bring her to the surface," Peridor said.
"Out of the question," Bracken replied. "The risk is too great."
"How can I help?" Kendra asked, a little offended that nobody was checking her opinion.
"Chiefly as bait, so to speak," Denwin said. "The demon requested you by name."
"That doesn't sound too bad," Kendra said.
After all, she had defeated the Demon King and faced his fierce army. Here, she would be surrounded by allies. What could Jubaya do?
"How dangerous is she?"
"We have a dozen of our best warriors in place," Peridor said. "We could get another dozen there. I'm confident we could protect you and maybe capture her."
Bracken frowned.
What about Mizell?
She's on her way, Peridor said.
Who is Mizell?
Kendra asked.
One of my sisters, Bracken said. She leads the warrior fairies.
Kendra laid a hand on Bracken's arm.
If this would give you a chance to catch the demon...
She's cornered, Bracken said. That's never a safe scenario. A desperate demon could get vicious. I'd rather seal up the sludge pit, leave her there until the end of time.
Begging your pardon, Denwin said. But can you imagine your mother leaving such an impurity in her realm, sealed up or not?
You're right, Bracken said, folding his arms. Let me do it, Kendra urged. I'll be careful.
I don't like it.
You have plenty of people to protect me. This could be a chance to get rid of some trouble. Let me do this. I insist.
Bracken sighed. From what I understand, Jubaya isn't much of a fighter, but she'll undoubtedly play mind games.
I'll play them right back, Kendra said, feeling brave. I've been on much riskier adventures than this.
Bracken shook his head.
Don't be so sure. Jubaya wants access to you for a reason. She sees an opportunity.
I'll keep my guard up, Kendra said. So will you. It's an opportunity for us, too.
Very well, Bracken relented. But at the first sign of trouble...
You'll bail me out, Kendra finished.
Shall we transport you?
Denwin asked eagerly.
Probably for the best, Bracken said.
Peridor scooped Kendra into his strong arms, cradling her, and sprang into the air, powerful wings turning the leap into flight. Looking down at the receding bridge and stream, Kendra saw Bracken rising as well, dangling from Denwin's ankles, using the Astrid like a hang glider. The higher they rose, the more blooming fields and winding streams Kendra could see. Zizix had apparently been a very large place, and so was the new fairy realm. In the distance, Kendra could see other Astrids heading their way, light glinting off golden feathers and armor. From her loftier vantage point, Kendra also noticed some parts of Zizix the fairies had not yet reclaimed. Off to one side, a row of harsh, fang-like rocks interrupted a series of low green hills. Sickly fumes steamed from a dark chasm that cut across an idyllic garden like a wound, and up ahead churned a bubbling pond of oily sludge. Peridor swooped down and landed in tall grass within view of the roiling pond. He set Kendra on her feet as Bracken landed beside them. The reek of the pond overpowered the aroma of the nearby flowers with a foul stench like molten tar and sulfur.
The fairy realm is huge, Kendra said.
It's big, Bracken agreed. Even up high, we couldn't see more than a fraction of it. But the sky here does not extend to outer space like it does on Earth. Our atmosphere eventually fades away, and if you go too far in any direction, the ground dwindles to nothing as well.
Can you fall off the edge? Kendra asked.
It would take a great effort and powerful magic, Bracken said. As you get to the edge, you ordinarily get turned around and head back toward the center. Same if you fly too high. You start heading down when you thought you were going up.
Strange, Kendra said.
This is not actually a world, just a pocket dimension attached to your world.
I would speak with the girl.
The words hit Kendra's mind like a shout, though her physical ears detected nothing.
Perhaps a conversation can be arranged, Bracken thought back calmly.
You wish to capture me. I will not let that occur. But I may strike a bargain.
We're listening, Jubaya, Bracken answered.
Withdraw your troops from my pool,
Jubaya expressed.
If you let me speak to the girl alone, I vow to cause her no harm, and at the end of our conversation I will surrender myself. If you pledge to transport me to the new demon prison.
You would exchange your freedom for private words with Kendra, Bracken replied.
Do you call this freedom?
Jubaya challenged.
I intend to trade imprisonment among enemies for imprisonment among my kind.
Why now? Bracken pressed. You could have asked for such a transfer months ago.
I have my reasons,
Jubaya answered.
And you have my terms.
Can she lie? Kendra asked Bracken. Certainly, he said quietly. But demons tend to keep their formal vows. All magical creatures do. Our natures allow certain oaths and promises to bind us. It is partly how preserves like Fablehaven were founded and how rules were established. Then I'll do it, Kendra said. Jubaya promised to cause you no harm, Bracken said. Agreements to confer during a truce are difficult to break, but she might tell you things that could lead you to harm. This solves your problem, Kendra said. It gets her out of here, and who knows, maybe I'll learn something useful. Or something hurtful, Bracken said. I've been shielding my half of our conversation from her mind. Because you're fairy kind, your mind is already protected. Jubaya can only see the thoughts you deliberately project to her. Go ahead and accept if you must. When should we talk? Kendra thought at the demon.
Immediately,
Jubaya replied.
Have the warriors back away. Send Kendra to my pool with your first horn. She will need it for us to interact properly.
Very well, Bracken responded, then turned to Kendra. He pulled a straight, spiral horn from a leather sheath at his waist and handed it to Kendra. Pearly white and silky smooth, the horn was the length of a dagger. Unicorns shed their first horn after childhood and the second toward the end of adolescence. Both retain magical properties, including the power to purify anything they touch. To certain beings, that purification could be deadly. Kendra had used this very horn to slay a venomous dragon. I'm shielding our conversation again, Bracken said. I was going to give you this anyhow as a precaution. Perhaps she anticipated me, or she might have a trick up her sleeve. I'll be careful, Kendra said. Bracken gave a nod. Very well. We'll be close by if you need us. Chapter 4 Jubaya Speaks. Astrids and warrior fairies withdrew from the turbulent sludge pool as Kendra walked toward it, the horn clutched tightly in her hand. She stopped a couple of steps from the edge of the roiling pond. The surface became still. Slowly, a shape arose from the muck, dripping black filth. It looked to Kendra like the charred head of a praying mantis.
Hello, child,
said a slithery voice that matched the words she had heard in her mind. Hello, Kendra replied, unsure what else to say. She did her best not to stare in horror. Judging by the dimensions of the head, Jubaya was probably 2 or 3 times her size.
I am Jubaya,
the demon said.
Tell me your name, child.
Kendra.
Your full name.
Kendra Marie Sorensen.
You are the one who slew Gorgrog the Vile, King of Demons.
Yes, Kendra admitted, her grip tight on the horn. She wondered if Jubaya might lunge at her to get revenge.
Relax, child,
Jubaya soothed in greasy tones.
I pledged no harm to you, and I am bound by my word. It is you who could harm me. Contact with that horn would send me to the endless night.
I'm not going to attack you, Kendra said. How did you know I killed the Demon King?
Such an act leaves an unmistakable